This podcast sponsored by Cherry Hill Volvo.
At Cherry Hill Volvo, we have absolutely incredible offers, and a plethora of both new and certified Volvos from which to choose. Join Cherry Hill Volvo for the pricing and attention you deserve. I am Judith Krupnik, president of Cherry Hill Volvo.
Hey, it's Rich. Thank you so much for listening to this podcast of the Zioli Show. Do us a favor and subscribe to the podcast, rate the podcast, and tell your friends. Either that or I'll leave to become President Trump's chief of staff. Thanks for listening.
Rich Zioli Show Podcast.
Yeah, you know, sometimes I laugh at things when the double standard is just so incredibly, glaringly obvious. It almost becomes, how do you not see this? But yet some people don't. Bill Peduto's the mayor of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. As you can imagine, a very, very robust Democrat city. His pinned tweet from June 1st, 2017 is, as the mayor of Pittsburgh, I can assure you that we will follow the guidelines of the Paris Agreement for our people, our economy, and our future. This is in response to the president pulling us out of the Paris Agreement and Sarah Sanders tweeting what the president said in response to the Pittsburgh mayor. I was elected by the voters of Pittsburgh, not Paris. I promised I would exit or renegotiate any deal which fails to serve U.S. interests. But the mayor there says, I don't care. I'm doing it. We'll be part of this treaty anyway. We'll do what we got to do. It doesn't matter what you say. So now Pittsburgh city officials see a proposed extreme risk gun law as an avenue to prevent suicide. Okay. The problem, though, of course, is that there is not the state of Pennsylvania does not allow cities to create their own gun policies. That's number one. But number two, this is a typical reaction from people on the left, which is to take away everybody's liberty under the guise of keeping you safe. Whatever we got to do, we'll do it to keep us safe. And this is what's now become national news here in Pittsburgh. I'll share with you this story from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. Ashley Murray, a divorce, the death of a close loved one, crippling financial stress, adding a gun into the mix. It was a temporary, though no doubt difficult, problem can become a permanent heartbreak, argue supporters of laws that temporarily remove firearms from a person's possession during times of extreme risk. Extreme risk. Pittsburgh City Council is considering such measures as one of its three proposed gun regulation bills. Opponents view the measure as an affront to personal liberty. Some state lawmakers on both sides of the aisle, though, are expressing interest. Well, that's shocking, right? Let me ask you this question, extreme risk. What does that mean, and how does that get determined exactly? Who decides that? Do we assemble a panel of government-sponsored psychologists to sit around and go, well, you know, it's you're having tough times at work, so therefore that's extreme risk. Or a divorce, yeah, a death in the family, you lost your job, piling debt, can't sell your home, I don't know. Maybe you're just not feeling good about yourself. Maybe the winter blues have got you down. I don't know exactly, but how do we determine that, and then we come in and take your property, your rights under the Constitution, get temporarily suspended while we figure it out? Pittsburgh's proposed extreme risk law would allow law enforcement or family and household members to petition a judge to remove guns from someone who is showing signs of suicidal behavior or threatening to harm another. Removal will be up for a year. A year. Now, I have another question, too, which is, are we going to let these people have other weapons in their house? Or are we going to take everything out? Can they drive a car? I'd like to know that. Can you drive a car if you are on this list? Seriously, I'd like to know, because I've seen some people do some crazy stuff with cars. I have seen people kill people with cars. And I would like to know if you are that dangerous to yourself or others where a judge is getting involved and taking your firearms away. I don't want you going anywhere near, say, my kid's school, for example. So can I keep you from my kid's school? What about knives? Do we take your knives out of the house? I mean, do we leave you some knives? Do we take the knives? Like, give you the kind of knives you can have on an airplane without the pointy parts? Or do we just, does somebody cut your food? Maybe the government sends a food cutter to your house who can cut your food for you. And what about, I don't know, do you have a garage? Are you allowed to keep your car in the garage? Because I know sometimes people have used that as a means to end their life. But then again, driving a car can be a means to end your life. So do we allow that to happen as well? See, this is what I mean about the nonsense of the left. This doesn't solve anything. This is just another way to make guns the bad guy and then find another way for government to confiscate those guns. That's it. That's all it is. What happens now? They take your guns and then you're on your own? Or do they take your guns and put you into a mental hospital? Or do they take your guns and put you into a some sort of a psychiatric care facility where you're not allowed contact with anybody else? Hands are weapons. And this goes on. This goes on. This is what they do. And the problem, of course, is that many people on the left, they herald this as just common sense. Common sense. In 2017, Duke University Law Journal, 10 psychiatry and law scholars published an analysis of 762 firearms removal cases in Connecticut from 1992 to 2013. They estimated that for every 10 to 20 gun seizures, one suicide was prevented. Now, think about that now. So for every 10 to 20 guns that were seized, one suicide was prevented. Not all suicides were prevented. This is not a 100% guarantee, right? I take your guns and then you're going to live forever kind of a thing. You're good to go. Currently in Pennsylvania, firearms removal is an aspect of the state's Mental Health Procedures Act of 1976, under which state police must be notified if a person has been adjudicated incompetent or has been involuntarily committed to a mental institution. Okay? But now in this one, this is different now. In this one, people can drop a dime on you and say, well, you know, Johnny's having a tough time. Johnny's having a real tough go of it. We got to do something. An extreme risk bill introduced by Pennsylvania Republican Todd Stevens of Montgomery County never made it out of the Judiciary Committee last session. He's working to reintroduce the bill this session, arguing that it would create an alternative to the 302 process, referring to the colloquial term for involuntarily committing someone for mental health care. I got to ask the obvious question here. If they're that dangerous, why would we not want them committed? We're just going to let them stay home, just no guns. That's the answer. I think if you believe that, then you are just somebody who's just trying to find an excuse to get guns out of somebody's house. That's what I really think. I mean, if you're that dangerous where they say to you, we're worried about you having a weapon. Worried about you having a weapon. But we're going to let you have all of these other weapons and be around kids. Fly an airplane? I don't know. Dr. Finnell, according to the article here, pointed to a research published in 2018 by an economist and gun rights advocate, John R. Lott Jr., that states, quote, "These laws apparently do not save lives. There's no significant effect on murder, suicide, mass shootings, or other violent crimes, though Mr. Lott points to some evidence that rape rates rise." Okay. Mr. Lott heads the gun rights advocacy group Crime Prevention Research Center. Now, Mr. Strasburger, one of the other people behind this measure, argues that there's due process. He says there's a misunderstanding that there would not be a court date, that there would not be an opportunity for them to respond in court through a hearing. They can come to court. They can find a lawyer. They can attend a court hearing and make their case as to why they shouldn't have an ERPO against them. After they've taken their stuff, of course, then you try to get it back. So isn't this the opposite of how it's supposed to work in this country? Isn't the argument that if they're going to take away your rights, they have to, the burden's on them, not you, to prove why they shouldn't? Isn't that how it's supposed to work? You want to come and take away my liberty? You got to prove, you have to show, I don't have to open my mouth. I don't have to say a damn word. You got to make the case of why you're taking away my liberty. I don't have to go and say why you shouldn't be able to take away my liberty. That's not how it's supposed to work. Pennsylvania law experts say that the preemption, state preemption, will likely prevent Pittsburgh from succeeding with the local legislation, but that they could advocate at the state level. Now, this is really important to understand. In Pennsylvania, you're not allowed, towns, municipalities, cities are not allowed to have their own gun laws. But the mayor of Pittsburgh is now saying, I'll do it anyway. I don't care. I'll do whatever I have to do. Arrest me, impeach me, try me, whatever it is. He sounds like he's off his rocker. Actually, the mayor of Pittsburgh sounds like somebody who shouldn't have a firearm, if you ask me. Under the tenets of this guy sounds very dangerous. He doesn't want to follow the law of his own state. He's literally going out there and saying, I'll do whatever I have to do. Don't you worry. Whatever it takes. You can't stop me. I won't allow the law to control me. I won't allow the law to stop me. Isn't that exactly what unhinged is? Isn't that the exact definition of the word unhinged? But here he is being championed by people going, he's so brave. He's so brave. He won't let the law stand in his way. He won't let them stop him. What would you call somebody who is a mayor of a city in America? The president of the United States is in charge of foreign policy and treaties and that sort of thing. within the parameters of the Constitution. But he says, I'm going to do it anyway. I would call that guy a megalomaniac narcissist, is what I would call him. Wouldn't you? I mean, I would say that. So if you're using a mental health parameter, I want this guy taken out off the streets. I want this guy taken out of the gun store. I want this guy taken away from weapons. I don't want him having the ability to be able to purchase high capacity things because he thinks he's above the law, this guy. But he's a, well, he's a very important mayor of Pittsburgh, you see. Very important guy. Of course, the other way you could do it is you could lobby the governor and the Democrats in Harrisburg to just go along with this on the state level, but that's not happening on the state level. You know why? Because most people with a brain understand Pennsylvania is a very pro-gun state. Thank God for that fact, by the way. And they also understand that this is stupid. If somebody is suicidal or a danger to other people, they shouldn't be on the streets. They shouldn't. Bottom line. They shouldn't be around knives. They shouldn't be around cars, bow and arrows, children, school buses. None of these things, period. That's how it's supposed to work. But now they literally want to change the law because it's offensive to those people to say that they're dangerous. So those, no, you know, you're allowed to do all the other things. We're just going to take your guns. That's it. This is a very, very dangerous, dangerous guy, this Bill Peduto, the mayor of Pittsburgh. Very dangerous because he's not going to let state law stand in his way. That's what he says. State law be damned. That is the very definition of somebody who's unstable, if you ask me. And hey, look, maybe you think, you know, if somebody's troubled, they shouldn't have a firearm. They might hurt themselves or hurt somebody else. Fair enough. It's an interesting argument to have. Two things, though. Number one, it's not up to a city to make that determination in Pennsylvania. That is up to the state to make that determination. That's number one. So then if a mayor says, I don't care, I'm doing it anyway, what do you call that person? What do you call an individual who says, state law be damned, I'll do my thing. I do my own thing. Whatever I got to do, I'll do it. Number two on that point, though, if you believe this person is that dangerous, where you literally want to come in and take their property away from them and things that could hurt them, what about all the other stuff in their house? Are you just, does that all get to stay? And how does that work? And then the keys to the car, and can they get drunk and drive? What happens with all that? What's my other question here for the policymakers in Pittsburgh? Now, Brooke Nadonley, who's 42 years old of Mount Washington, she is now filing a lawsuit against the mayor. Actually, they're trying to get him impeached. Trying to get him impeached because he's breaking state law, which is good. But you see, again, the mayor's a Democrat, so people are rooting for him. And the media and the national press, and certainly they go, because he said, quote, arrest me, sue me, impeach me. I was elected to protect my constituents, and that is exactly what I will do. Yeah. Arrgh. It's a megalomaniac when you just completely say, I'm a mayor. I'm the mayor. But you know what? I'm more powerful than state law. To me, that means you're off your rocker. You're unhinged. Now, this is that's Pennsylvania. That's Pittsburgh Democrat there. You've heard a lot about, of course, this notion of Democrats and how they get a pass on things like saying, for example, I don't know, slavery is actually indentured servitude, like Northam in Virginia. This guy's amazing to me. He's really amazing. But I've got others today, too, I want to start with before I even get to him. Number one is this Democrat member of Congress. Her name is Representative. Let's see. You probably have heard of her at this point now. She's very, very famous because she's off her rocker as well. She is a Democrat member of Congress who wears a hijab on her head. Her name is Representative Congresswoman Omar. OK. She went on a series of anti-Semitic tweets over the weekend. She's got lots of problem with the Jews, you understand. Now, according to this story on NPR, House Democratic leaders condemn Muslim lawmakers' remarks about Israel. House Democratic leaders released a joint statement condemning one of the two first Muslim women to serve in Congress for comments on social media widely condemned as anti-Semitic. Quote, from the vampiric one, Nancy Pelosi. We are and will always be strong supporters of Israel in Congress because we understand that our support is based on shared values and strategic interests. Legitimate criticism of Israel's policies is protected by the values of free speech. You notice what they do here when they're dealing with one of their own? They say they have a free speech right. And it's just policy considerations, just policy criticism. I know lots of people who have policy disputes with Israel. Have foreign policy disputes with the United States in terms of our handling of things and believe it's because we are too dependent upon protecting Israel in the region. Nobody's questioning that you're allowed to have those conversations. No, nobody is. But this is the ruse of what the left does. They pretend like, oh, no, it's just people that they don't like policy positions. It's nothing to do with it. She was making nasty and offensive comments about Jewish people on Twitter, even calling them hook-nosed. Yeah. And then they try to spin it as, well, she's, I mean, First Amendment allows you to, Congresswoman Omar's use of anti-Semitic tropes and prejudicial remarks are wrong, and we call upon Congresswoman Omar to immediately apologize for these hurtful comments. You have an anti-Semite in your ranks, and you want her to apologize. Ah, that's charming. When we heard about Steve King and his comments regarding white supremacy, everybody said, he's got to go. Okay, he's got to leave the party. He's got to leave. And then he said, I didn't say what the New York Times printed. I didn't say what I said. The New York Times took me out of context. She's not denying what she said. They're her words. They're on Twitter. She tweeted these things out. And Democrats go, well, she should apologize. Apologize? How many times do we hear that President Trump is anti-Semitic? He's not, by the way. I mean, he's literally has his daughter's Jewish and Jewish grandkids, and Jared Kushner is Orthodox Jew. And but how many times do we hear this? He's anti-Semitic. He encourages the dog whistles to the anti-Semites. This woman is literally now going on Twitter and bashing Jewish people. And the Democrats' response is, well, she should say, I'm so sorry. Now, there was a letter to Jewish House Democrats, one of which represents New Jersey. His name is Josh Gottheimer. He's up in the 5th District of New Jersey. He and another Democrat began circulating a letter on Monday to their colleagues asking them to join in, asking party leadership to condemn anti-Semitism. Can you believe it's the year 2019 and Jewish members of Congress have to ask their own party to condemn anti-Semitism? Really? The letter, clearly a reference to freshman Representative Ilhan Omar, Democrat of Minnesota, who is the target of recent criticism on the left and the right for comments seen as both overt and subtly anti-Semitic. Meanwhile, Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy, Republican, said in a statement that the GOP will take action this week to ensure the House speaks out against this hatred and stands with Israel and the Jewish people. She had tweeted a number of very, very hurtful things, but then tried to spin it as, I'm just questioning Israel. I'm not questioning Jews. I'm just Israel policy. You know, there are a lot of Republicans. There are a lot of libertarians, for example, who question whether or not Israel has too much of an influence on United States foreign policy. Do they call Jews hook-nosed? Do they accuse Jewish money of being the reason for foreign policy? No, they just talk about the fact that Israel is a very, very obviously prominent country in the region that's our friend, and they wonder whether or not, like, they have policy conversations. And there's nothing wrong with that, by the way. Like, you're allowed to have policy conversations. For example, if we get out of Syria, it's something that Israel may not like. So you have that conversation. That's different than being an anti-Semite. That's different than being anti-Semitic. It's also different than saying, well, we can't get out because the Jew money won't let us get out. You know, because all the Jews and their money keep us there. That you say that, that's racist. I mean, there's no doubt about that. That's absolutely racist. But she's a Democrat. So as long as she says sorry, I guess it's going to be okay. Why aren't they throwing her out of the party is my question. Why aren't they kicking her out of the House? Why don't they expel her from Congress? Oh. Because they're not alone. She's not alone in her thinking, by the way. She's not alone in her thinking. And again, there's nothing wrong with policy questions regarding Israel. Nobody's doubting that. But I don't have to tell you that because you have a brain. You know that. But you see, they're trying to spin it that way. And that's where I need you to realize that that is just spin. Jonathan A. Greenblatt, the CEO and the national director of the Anti-Defamation League, said, quote, as Americans and Jews, we expect our politicians to condemn bigotry, not to fuel it. Words matter. At a time when anti-Semitism is on the rise in the U.S. and abroad, Representative Omar is promoting the ugly anti-Semitic conspiracy theory that Jews have an outsized influence over politics. So much of the double standard that occurs in this country, it just amazes me too. And it really amazes me when you think about how much is directed at the president and his family. And then this stuff actually happens, and then they just ignore it, or they do a tepid, she's wrong, but she's got the First Amendment to protect her kind of a thing. Another Democratic freshman lawmaker who is also Jewish, Max Rose of New York, criticized Omar for her tweets. Quote, Congresswoman Omar's comments are deeply hurtful to Jews, including myself. And you know what else I think is charming in all this, of course, is that this woman is not, she's not walking any of this back. You know, she's owning this stuff. She's saying, she's basically coming out there and saying, it's okay. What I'm saying here is right, and it's only AIPAC that the reason why people are mad at me. AIPAC, the American-Israeli Public Affairs Committee. Now, let me share with you a couple of the other things that she has said. Israel has hypnotized the world. May Allah awaken the people and help them see the evil doings of Israel. She acknowledged that the tweet is offensive, but has refused to apologize or delete it. Others have called for Omar to be removed from her committees, including House Republican Conference Chair Liz Cheney of Wyoming and Muslim reformer Dr. Zudi Jasser. Zudi Jasser, of course, who's a great guy, great friend of the show. He's a terrific guy. He says, as an American Muslim, I plead that this is only a good first step to be followed by a swift sanction against Representative Omar for bigotry unfit for the U.S. Congress with removal from all committees. Ignoring this would bring the bigotry of low expectations to a new level for Muslims. Now, this is cute here. The precedent for censuring a representative and removing him or her from committees was set last month when the Republican leadership in the Democrat-controlled House acted against Representative Steve King for comments he made to the New York Times in which he appeared to accept white supremacy and white nationalism. And of course, he says, the New York Times took me out of context. I didn't say those things. Well, the House then quickly passed a resolution condemning what he said, which he voted for, by the way. But then the Democrats run around saying that the Republicans are the party of racism, the party of hate, right? You hear this over and over again. It's like a nonstop pounding of this. Then here you have a member of Congress who's calling Jews names and accusing them of being controlled by, of us being controlled by their big Jewish money, and that Israel has hypnotized the world and they're hook-nosed and everything else. And they don't have a real problem with this. They really don't. The fact of the matter is that there are other members of Congress and the Democratic Party who feel exactly the same way she does, by the way. There's a growing anti-Semitism in the Democratic Party right now in this country. It has nothing to do with debating foreign policy. It has nothing to do with legitimate. And you know me, I want to get out of Syria. I want to get out of Saudi Arabia. I mean, out of Afghanistan. I have lots of concerns about that region and America's presence there. So I'm hardly one to say that I'm beholden, that Israel controls my thinking or my show or that sort of thing. I know anti-Semitism when I see it. You know it when you see it. And here we have it on actual full display by a Democrat member of Congress being condemned across the board. But of course, nothing will absolutely, and I mean nothing will happen to this woman. Nothing. Because Democrats get a pass. Just like when you wear shoe polish on your face, or you say that slavery was actually indentured servitude, or, you know, I don't know, like you have a non-disclosure agreement for all of your campaign staff that nobody's allowed to talk about what happened on your campaign, even as you criticize the president for having non-disclosure agreements. I'm talking about New Jersey Governor Phil Murphy, another Democrat, who's a gigantic hypocrite.
Racioli 3 to 6, Talk Radio 1210, WPHD.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.